It's 2 o'clock in Montreal. It's time for the Montreal Arab Show. You're listening to the CKT Radio at 90.3 FM. I'm Sarah Hassanin. Today's show is exclusive.
This week we'll be hosting Mr. Mohammed Sharif Kamel, an Egyptian Montrealer, community leader, political activist, blogger, and co-founder of the Egyptian-Canadian Coalition for Democracy. We'll mostly be talking about the Gaza crisis and much more about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Actually, a part of that interview was aired a few weeks ago, but there wasn't enough time on the show to finish the whole interview. So we'll be airing the interview once again, but this time it's going to be the full interview in English. Looking forward to it.
So could you please give us a bit of a background about what exactly is going on? And keep in mind, listeners who don't have much of a background, who don't really know the historical context and the background of what's going on.
What's going on over there in Palestine and between Palestinian and Israeli government over there is a story that started 100 years ago when the group of Jewish group, Zionist, met in Taos, in Switzerland, in 1897, and they decided that they would like to have a homeland for Jews. And they start to plan which place is the better. There was several options. They choose Palestine, as Palestine can have a link to the tradition Judaism history. And they started to lobby the governments in Europe at that time. In parallel to this, there was a meeting, and actually coincidentally happened in Montreal, between a different group of Jews who did not agree with the concept of having a Jewish state, claiming that this will be a trap for Jews to be brought all to one state and live over there. This very old history that's written, and several historians wrote about it. We're not going to go there. It's a very old one. But we'll jump to the First World War, when this area, which is Palestine, was under the control of the Ottoman Empire. At that time, the First World War, there was the European government, especially UK, was soliciting people to help them and finance their war against the Ottoman Empire. And they give what we call, and everybody know, Bilford was the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Britain, and he gave a promise to the same group, not the same person for sure, many of them died by then, and maybe and a few of them were still there, gave the same group of people a promise, which is called the Balfour Declaration, that as soon as he get a hand on Palestinian area, he will guarantee that we're going to give Jewish the right to have their own state over there. The Balfour Declaration is documented, is known. A historian wrote about it. It exists for sure. So all this happened on the same time that there was people living there, and they called their homeland Palestine under the Ottoman Empire at that time. After the collapse of Ottoman Empire and the division of the Ottoman Empire territories, Palestine was part under the Britain mandate. Britain started to fulfill their promise. Jews started to immigrate over there. They started immigration actually over there before that, and there was a good Jewish presence on this area. They lived in harmony with the Palestinians, who are Jewish, Christian, and Muslim. They lived in harmony full over the period, and this continued until the late 20s, early 30s, and that's before even the Second World War for sure. And at that time, the clashes start to happen between, we call them Arab, which is they are Palestinian, and we have to be very careful when we call Arab, doesn't mean we call Muslim. No, they are Jewish, Christian, and Muslim. Clashes start between them and between the settlers, who start really to acquire land and get permission from the British mandates over there to acquire land. And they did build their own settlement, and they did really occupy this area with under British mandate. They consider it actually acceptable to do that, which is not acceptable to the owner of the land. This continued until after the Second World War, and we know and we recognize and we acknowledge what happened to the Jewish under Hitler, under the Nazis in Germany, which is for sure a disaster, a catastrophe, a massacre for Jewish people to happen like this. And the Holocaust was being unfortunately used with some people to push Jewish to move more to Palestinian area. It started between 39, the second wave of immigration to this area was 39 to up to 1947. 1947 was a really a milestone where there was a percentage of Jews over there who built their own settler as agreed with the British mandate over there. And they start to attack Arab village during this period. And they start to threaten Arab. If they did not leave their village, they would be killed. And this is, was a really a start of a war. British went to the newborn United Nations at that time, and they asked them to split the land between Jewish, immigrated Jewish, and Arab, who are, again I underline, are Jewish, Christian, and Muslim. The decision has been taken to split the land. I think it was in the range of 50-50. I don't have the figure in front of me exactly, but it's close to this. And there was a lot of areas are considered an allied, undetermined, but the end was almost close to 50-50 between the new Jewish population and the Arab, the native of the land. And they decided at the time that Jerusalem will be under UN mandate, and this would be a non-divided and non-given city to any of those allies. The Jewish settler for sure accept the decision. The Arab countries and the Arab of the Palestine with Arab countries, with several other countries, they reject the decision because it was dividing your own home and give it piece of it to other people who came from Europe and from different places, but were mainly Europe at that time, running from the Nazis' crimes over there, and they decided to divide. So for sure, Arab Palestinians reject this division, and this were the war of the cold 1948 war. With the 1948 wars, for sure, that's, and we know, and for sure I use it because we know, it's a fact, we're not something we speaking about now, end with victorious of the Jewish settlers, who took over close to 75% of the land, a little more than this, and took half of Jerusalem, and they decide to announce that they're in the, and actually it was May 15 at that time when they announced the born of their state, which is known now as Israel. That was the start of the story. And to bring it to today, I'm just going to stop here and see where you would like to go. But to bring it today, we have to recognize that acquiring the land done by force, by threaten, by killing people, by massacres happened in several villages, by splitting houses, splitting by meaning splitting. I have a house, I live in a house, and the settler come and take half of it and live with me and try to push me out as long as they can until force the people to go or people die, and then they threw their children out on the street and that became their house. And since 1948, hundreds of thousands of Palestinian, it was estimated at that time 750,000, lived in tents. These tents turned to be later on constructed houses, but still considered tent to refuge the Arab who've been evacuated forcibly from their land. That's the start of the story that we're living now on the 2021.
So the conflict has been going on since then. So there's been ups and downs, but to sum up the story, that's how it started. But then ever since that happened, it's always been aggressive. Like we could say there were brief periods of peace in between, but then again, the escalation of violence would come back again, right?
I would not call it peace. I would call it ceasefire. Because a peace by means of a peace, they mean that you and I have a peace treaty between each other, and we agreed to this peace treaty, and we live in peace, and we accept the terms. But Palestinians never, there's never been a peace agreement put on the table for Palestinians to accept first or to negotiate. And there was times that where there is real fight. There was time that there is just people live and that's try to go on with their life in the refugee camps. That's how it works. Until 1967, when Israel and the Arab war started, we call it the Six Days War, started in June 1967, and Israel at the time took over the rest of Palestine, Gaza and the West Bank, and even occupied the Sinai from Egypt and the Golan Heights from Syria and a portion from Lebanon, a small area in Lebanon, which is still occupied in Lebanon and Syria, Golan Heights. Sinai has an agreement between Egyptian and Israel who left Sinai later on, but in Gaza, they left Gaza under the pressure from international community and from the Gazan resistance movement. So they left Gaza, exited Gaza after, and they still occupying West Bank. When I say left Gaza, doesn't mean that they left it in peace, because Gaza since then, and it was about, can say it's almost 17, 18 years now, under complete siege by Israel from sea, land, and even the air. They cannot brought anything without the Israeli permission. So that's why I can't call it peace, but I can call it calm, ceasefire, and people just go with their own daily life.
Okay, now, thank you for the clarification that you regard these periods to be just to be periods where both sides maybe are tired of fighting. So there's just a cease of fire, as you said, but it's not a comprehensive peace negotiation where both parties are winners. It's obviously a win-lose negotiation, as you're saying. Now, why now? Like this escalation happening these days, why now? Why is this happening now?
Yeah, it's two. There's one thing that brought to the incident itself that brought all this to the light now, which is number one, Sheikh Jarrah village, Jerusalem. Before 1967 was divided between Israel and the West Bank, which is under Jordanian administration. After 1967, when Israel acquired or occupied the rest of the Palestinian land, part of it was Jerusalem. International law and UN and all the world recognize the East Jerusalem as occupied area. Israeli and the West Bank start to build settlement. And just try to imagine that the settlement is a group of people who come from somewhere else, go to the piece of land, said that we will build here our village or our neighborhood or whatever they can call it as they like. And then they get a permission from the Israeli government to build it. If this is not their land, this is an occupied land, which is in West Bank. And we have in so far known 6,800 settlements in the West Bank being built this way. At the same time, if any Palestinian went to the Israeli administration who administrate the occupied land to get a permit to build, they deny him the permit because they have no right to build, because this is, as per the Israeli administration, it is only a Jewish land. So this is the start of really, it's not a start, but a start on this a particular issue, a real discriminatory, I can consider discriminatory law that gives the Jewish who came from everywhere on the earth the right to return, they call it right to return, to Palestine, as we know it, which is even the land before 1948, giving to them the right to build settlement and settle in the West Bank, occupy it land, and give them the right to build, but deny this right to the Arab who lived there for generations, thousands of years, lived there for even have their own house. Sheikh Jarrah is one of the villages, which has happened before in several other villages, where Israeli go over there and decide to take over these houses. Why? Because they consider that this is illegal to the Israeli understanding or propaganda, I call it very clearly. It's illegal because they don't have a documentation or a paper showing that they own their land and they own their houses based on the Israeli law. So by this, Israeli Jewish have the right to take it over from the Palestinian who live there for decades, and they have their own land, their own homes. And this is was very tense issue. Israeli government or administration of this area decided to proceed and give them Israeli Jewish the grant. Palestinian has no choice but to go to Israeli court. That's the only thing they have in hand, because international community don't listen, don't even care about what's going there. So they went to the Israeli court, and the Israeli court is still looking at the issue. And I think there was a sentence should be rendered about a week ago, but then they postponed it to the next month because of what happened of the interrupting of the violence. Several people from several places start to come to Palestine, international community, human rights organization, civil society start to really mobilize to go there and to protect the Palestinian people at their home, because Jewish settlers started to, and I usually use the word Jewish settler, not Jewish, because a lot of Jews reject this. Jewish settlers start to go there and attack Palestinians, grab them out of their home, throw rocks at them. And we know that Jewish settlers are armed as well with firearms, with guns, and they start to attack them. So Palestinians from several villages start to go there. International people from community start to move there. Human rights organization, a campaign started. This is in parallel to, usually on Ramadan, which is a month that just ended, which is a Muslim month of Ramadan, people go to Al-Aqsa Mosque to pray over there every day, not only Ramadan, but in Ramadan, there is mass prayer taking place there, especially on the last 10 days, which is very secular to Muslim, and especially on the night of the 27th. Ramadan.
To
the end of Ramadan and to the Eid prayer and the last Friday of Ramadan. All this is considered emotionally very attached to Muslim at this area, that is their mosque. There's nothing wrong with it to go there. And every time Muslim try to go there to pray, Israeli soldiers, they try to block them from going there. At this moment, specifically, a group of Jewish settlers, right-wing group, decided to have a campaign and demonstration and invade Al-Aqsa Mosque on the 28th of Ramadan, okay. So which is coming the day after. So Muslims start to move there to protect their mosque. And we saw all what's going on in the mosque when the Israeli soldiers even attack the people praying inside the mosque, attacking. And we know usually when praying inside the mosque, it's not just inside the building. It is the whole area surrounding the mosque is part of the prayer, because the building itself will never accommodate all the population. So they started to attack them. They started to attack them, starting with even end with fire, pushing fire and then firearms and stuff like this. This is for sure rupt the peace as they considered the peace, which is a calm at this area, both incidents together. And Israeli soldiers did support and protect the right wing Jewish settler going there to interrupt the Muslim prayer and going there to evacuate the people of Palestine who settle and live for long, long time, decades on Sheikh Jarrah village. So all this together brought the Palestinian of Gaza, who's really part of it, said, guys, we cannot just wait, it look like this and nobody doing anything. So with the breaking of violence on this area, Palestinian not protected, Palestinian being killed on the street. So people of Gaza said, those our families, extended families and our close family, even to some of them. So I think we have to tell Israel that we exist. And we, at that moment, the rockets start coming from the Gaza to Israel settlement around Gaza and the south city and the west city cities of Israel to the border of Gaza and surrounding, and even it reach more than this. And this is to say that not only to support their relatives and close friends and families in West Bank, in Jerusalem and on Sheikh Jarrah, but it's also to tell the world that there is a siege on Gaza for more than 17, 18 years. And the people in Gaza do not really live in freedom. They don't have anything there. They just have to beg Israel to give them or to allow the aid to go through their gates to go to Gaza. And that's why this was unfortunate situation that brought this violence, that all of us see that people are dying, children are dying, women are dying, and for sure the destruction of taking place is very clear to all of us.
Okay, we've been hearing stories that there are certain political motives that have been driving the Israeli administration to kind of pick a fight now. So how far is this true?
There is a piece I didn't mention, maybe it's important to mention. Israel government, the Knesset, has four elections in the last 2 years. They cannot really reach an agreement of who's governing the country. They have a 50-50 almost split between several wings. And there is no one party in Israel has a real close even to majority. They are very tiny, tiny minorities. When we speak about the majority on the Knesset, 61 seat, if I remember the number correctly, the magic number, I think Likud has 20 seats, who is the Benjamin Netanyahu, is the head of the coalition and the head of the party. Netanyahu is known for the investigation of the corruption. He is considered to be one of the most corrupted prime ministers in Israel history. And there is a court case. And he has immunity by being the prime minister. And everybody knows as soon as Benjamin Netanyahu out of office, he for sure will be brought to court. And I'm not saying he's guilty or not in this case, but the evidence and the investigation saying that he is corrupted. And he is, the family even is corrupted. As per the investigation that taking place that by Israeli courts and Israeli system. At the same time, Palestinian has their own election, was scheduled to be done about 2 weeks ago. And internally, the Israel rejected that Palestinian have vote on Jerusalem. This was a big fight between Israeli and the custodian of the Church of Al-Qiyamah over there in Jerusalem, and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So in parallel, those two things happened, that Israel was not able to reach an agreement in government. Netanyahu failed in the last attempt to form his government. It's been given to his opponent to form the government just a few days, 2 days before the erupting of all this. And they deny the Palestinian rights, so the fight starts and the violence starts really even with the priest of the church and the leader of the mosque, both of them, because they reject that Palestinian cast the ballot for their own election on the Al-Aqsa Mosque and on the church over there. So when we take this consideration, this is very clear that there is something benefit go to Netanyahu and the right wing by having all this happening on those days, because right after the interruption of violence and the attack on Gaza by Israeli army, the opponent of Netanyahu decided not to work in forming the government because the country is in war. So Netanyahu remained on the crown, the prime minister of Israel, for 2 years without mandate, without election, and he's still going in.
Exactly. So I guess this it clarifies things and explains why this is happening, especially now. I'll go now with you to reactions, and you mentioned earlier the international community and how they're reacting to what's happening, to this crisis. Up till now, we have 200 victims. What's your take on the international reaction to this?
The international community, and we have to recognize that it is a disaster has been built by the silence of the international community. And even if we didn't go before 1967, and we stopped at 1967, as many countries recognized that this is, should be the border of Israel, which is, I have a doubt of many things there, but it's not my business. It is the international community recognized 1967 as the border of Israel. And the Palestinian has the right to their own homeland country to be established in West Bank and Gaza. It's since 1967 until today, the international community did nothing at all. The United Nations has this resolution. Even there is more resolution than this. There is resolutions about the right of Palestinians to return to their land, which is considered Israel on the border, within the border of 1967. And no one able to really implement this resolution. No one able to implement the resolutions about 1967 because Israel rejected. And the international community, not only silent to this, but most of the country are dealing with Israel as a legitimate, even they consider it occupation land, they still deal with Israel as this. And they supply weapons to Israel. They arm them. They deal with them normally. Several countries moved their embassy to Jerusalem, which is shouldn't be under Israeli control, at least the east part of it. Several countries, and unfortunately Canada among them, buy product from the settlement and written on it product of Israel, which is this is an, a great violation for international law. And no one country said anything about the human rights violation that take place every day on the occupied land in West Bank and Gaza, the siege on Gaza on more than 17, 18 years now. No one cared about those almost 2 million people living in Gaza, about them, how they live, if they suffer or not. It's not, they don't, nobody cared. And most of them are from the border before 1967, where they were in Palestine and evacuated from their land for, to the refugees camp. And why, that's why the density of Gaza is very high, 2 million in this small piece of land. And the international community don't care, didn't do anything. And every time Palestinians try to go to the United Nations, they get maybe soft resolution sometime or a veto from US the other time, because US consider Israel their own allies, which is, I don't know why, because they don't do anything by just harming U.S. image around the world. And but we might have to say because there's a right-wing Jewish who finance the election of U.S. And it's knowing that Biden, unfortunately, one of the people who must get most of the finance from the Jewish Zionist group in U.S. So the international community did nothing until now. So that's why Palestinian has no choice but try to, you know, they scream by what they're doing. Because if anybody said that the rocket from Gaza is unacceptable, I would consider it unacceptable for sure to firearm a rocket to any place. But what those people can do, and when they say that the rocket is not acceptable, for sure, we can might agree that any fight not acceptable. But what about the blank bombarding of Gaza and killing people, destroying houses, killing children, killing women, and destroying the infrastructure of this small area, which has been built with a penny amount of finance, while Israelis have the finance from all over the world. Just yesterday, close to a $1 billion arm deal decided by the U.S. government to Israel, and nothing goes to Palestinians. And all this, and even above all this, Israel attack and destroy the building in Gaza who's hosting the international press, the CBC, the BBC, the Al Jazeera, the Associated Press, the France Press, all those people hosted in a building. Israel destroy this building, and the only thing we hear from international community, it is not acceptable. The word is not acceptable is not a word even to be said. I think I would expect that the international community who is speaking about human rights and freedom of expression and freedom of press, they have to say at least it is condemned to do that. Several times, Palestinians tried to bring Israeli action to the International Court of Justice, been blocked by United States and other countries, been even denied the right to investigate anything and go in Israel because they consider it internal affair. It's expired land, guys, not an external affair. And we know that the war crime committed by Israel in Lebanon before, in Kana massacre, has been brought to the International Court of Justice and been shelved because nobody except to deal with them. So several investigations have been done on the international level. Human rights organization, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, several human rights organizations have a detailed report about the human rights violation by Israeli and the occupied land and within Israel border itself, a discrimination. Jimmy Carter wrote his book, which is about peace, not apartheid, because what's taking place in this area now is a clear apartheid. And we see when Palestinian Arab try to support their relatives on Sheikh Jarrah, they just been denied and been attacked and killed by Israeli settler and by Jewish extreme right-wing group in all the area, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, in Yaffa. They just attack and in Lod, they attack Arab and the police, Israeli police attack the Arab, not attack any Jewish, and they cannot attack Jewish because for them it's forbidden. So international community did nothing. International community now just wasting time in United Nations, waiting Israel to finish its mission by destroying Gaza, hoping that Israel will be able to destroy all the infrastructure of the fighter who fighting against Israel from Gaza. That is the only thing they're doing. But because look what's happened, just unacceptable words about unacceptable and stuff like this going from left and right. And even United Nations Security Council is meeting now for 3 days, not able to come up with any solution, with any word, just word about ceasefire, and that's it. Calm down and ceasefire, and then we will look at the Palestinian rights, how we can implement it. They're looking at this since 1967 and it's not been implemented. 1967 is more than generation, two generations now, and people are leaving and the land occupied. So when we speak about it, the only country on the earth who occupy land, violate human rights, mm-hmm. practice apartheid, and nobody stopped them and nobody forced them to stop. I think the system, if we remember how the system in South Africa collapsed, it's collapsed only when the international community put a pressure on them. It started by civil society, and I think now we have to start to call to boycott Israel, to stop dealing with Israel, and that has to start from the civil society, not from the government, because the government are really entrenching this with Israel on the suffering of Palestinians. They, all the international governments are part of it. We cannot deny this, that a UN resolution and Security Council resolutions since 1967, no one has the gut to tell Israel, you have to apply it or we will put a siege on you. You remember what happened in Iraq, when I put a siege in Iraq because of disagreement with the Americans on this. And they put a siege in Iraq, left and right and center, and even they went there without UN acceptance, and Iraq, U.S. decided just to go to war against Iraq, and all this happened. What's happening with Israel? We are not asking to fight Israel. We're asking to force them to implement United Nations resolutions since, by the way, 1947 resolution that Israel being created with is based on two-state solution on a border being determined by the British mandate at that time. And this is the only right for Israel to exist. So if they would like to exist, I think they should be forced to go back to 1947 resolution and agree to have the Palestinian state. I use the word agree because nobody can force them. So the international community doing nothing. Your question about the international community, they doing nothing. They really have the gut to go condemn the rockets. By the way, the rockets coming from Gaza to Israel. And I said, it's not acceptable to have any fight and people lose life in any side of the world. That's no doubt about this. But the rocket coming from there, I'm sorry to say that close to toys to what Israel army is. Israel is one of the best, if not the best and biggest army on the earth. And we are not just tolerating this and condemning the rocket coming from Gaza and not condemning the Israeli attack on Palestinian. Just consider that it has to stop. International community is weak. And unless the civil society rise up and force their own government to act, I don't think anything will happen. And even if the things calm down in a few days or a few weeks, or I don't know when, it will come back again. People will never live at peace unless they have their rights. And the rights is not a point of view of Israeli or Palestinian. The rights is being created by history, is being approved and agreed on by United Nations itself.
What chances are there out for the Egyptian government to play a significant role towards this crisis now?
Egyptian government have a good, stable relation, not 100% agreed on everything with the government of Gaza, but they have a stable relation with them. And they have a line of contact with them. But when we spoke about the siege on Gaza that's taking place for 17, 18 years now, we have to mention that the Egyptian government is part of the siege on Gaza, because Gaza border with Israel is the shortest border of Gaza. Most of Gaza border is within Egypt. But actually almost 50-50, yeah, just to say, so because there's the cross between both are very clear borders. And the Egyptian government actually never been a friend of the people of Gaza. They deny them medication as Israel do exactly. They deny them fuel as Israel do exactly. They deny them food as Israel do it exactly. And even during COVID problem we live in, they deny them medication. They deny them vaccine. They deny them even test kits for COVID. So imagine that they've been denied everything. So Egypt and Israel are complies in what actually the siege is. Egypt for sure have a hand over there. And we know that the Egyptian regime has been brought to power by Israel allies. And what's his name? Benjamin Netanyahu several times said that I would never have good friends as what I have from the Egyptian president right now. So if Egypt can do something, yes, Egypt might be able to put some pressures on Palestinians. But to really reach a ceasefire, you need somebody to put pressure on the Israeli. So what the Israeli tried to do is they tried to use Egypt and other countries who have some sense of relation with the people of Gaza and the Palestinian Authority for sure. And they tried to help them, to pressure them to stop. So Israel ended winning. And there's no ceasefire like this would be established a winning side. it will end with lose-lose, actually. We try to reach a win-win when people live in peace and harmony. So if you would like to tell Palestinian of Gaza, an Egyptian would like to do something, they have to tell them clearly that stop fire and all siege are going to be removed. At this time, I think this will consider a win-win condition. So Benjamin Netanyahu can say that I win the war and I stop the rocket and enjoy his victories. And people of Palestine, Gazan people can say, we win the war and the siege has been lifted. So this is what we call it win-win. But what they try to do is they just try to pressure Palestinian of Gaza as before, we'll destroy you, we'll kill you, please stop the war for the sake of children, for the sake of the women, and that's what they use. Please stop the war and we'll give you some medication and we're going to have another conference to discuss peace treaty. So if you would like to ask me the question, is Israel going to succeed or not? I have no idea, because the war is a war. And if Palestinians reach a point that they cannot resist anymore, they will stop the fighting with Israeli, because they are in even whatever rocket, the 1,000 rocket they threw, they are in the weak side of the fight. So yes, they can stop it, but under one condition, nobody knows. But if they do, this will be another round of maybe a couple of years and come back again.
Mr. Kamel, have you been personally in touch with any of the Palestinians who are struggling right now as we speak?
I'm not in touch with any Palestinian over there on the occupied land or in Gaza. I'm in touch with Palestinian here in Montreal who have their own families over there and all their own relatives over there between Gaza and Rafah and the West Bank and the Sheikh Jarrah. We are in touch with the people, of Palestinian who live within the Israel and they carry Israel IDs and been faced with the discrimination by the police and by the Israeli government and the Jewish right-wing extremists over there. We're in touch with those people who are locally here, but not the people over there.
And what vibes are you getting from the...
They are very devastating. They don't know what to do. They are in shock. They just would like to be sure that they hear about their family, that they are safe, but they are not safe. They know that any second, any one of them could be died. Even a full family could be died, and we know that's not the first war Israel bombed Gaza and families died in total. And 7 people in one family, 8 people in one family, and the last war the same thing, and this war the same thing. So they don't know if their family will survive or not. And it's not only close family. Those people are living in a life that they know each other, neighbors, friends went to school together, went to hospitals to be treated together. They married to each other. They have a relative. So it's not only scared and devastated about their own small families, but about their big family as well. And they can't find any hope. They don't see a hope, but maybe, and that's what happened when Nazis attack Jewish and when Nazis, when Hitler occupied Paris and France, the whole, and several, for sure, other countries in Europe, everybody stand by French, right to resist, to kick the Nazi and Hitler out of France. And I think that is the only hope, that people stand with Palestinian, right to resist and kick the occupation out of their home. And that's how those people feel. They feel they can do nothing. They just have to follow the news and just have to see what's going to happen tomorrow. Can they send some food, some money to their relative to eat? Is their relative eating? Are they hungry? Are they have their medication? Even Israel bombarding the hospitals, even. So there is no secret place for Israel. They bombard mosques, churches, hospitals, the press buildings. So what do you think people will live like this? That's how the relatives here and friends here in Montreal live, in a minute by minute, waiting the sad news and they knowing that it will come.
Palestinian families living here in Montreal. How do you classify the Palestinian-Israeli conflict over the years? Is it an ethnic or religious or political conflict?
Well, to be honest, I have to say that's all of them, all of the above. The three of them for sure, because isn't it because we're speaking about Arab who's on this land, who's multi-ethnic religious between Muslim, Christian, and Jewish, and settler came from several places in the world, all over the world almost, take their own land. So it is not a religion here, because there is Jewish on the other side, and there's Christian for sure on the other side, on this side, not on the Israeli side, but on the Arab side. And so it is, cannot be religion. But at the same time, Christian consider that the Jerusalem is their sacred place. It is their place, place of Jesus and Mary, and they need to enjoy this place in a peaceful way, which is not there. Since the establishment of Israel, there is no peace over there. There was peace before that, but not since then. Muslims consider that Al-Aqsa Mosque is there, and Jerusalem is part of it, is there as well. And usually, before the establishment of Israel, Christian, Jewish, and Muslim lived in this place in peace, because Jewish has their wall as well, the West Wall over there, where they worship the wall. And they did enjoy this in a peaceful way until 1947. There was a peace sharing of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem is, when we say it is a city of the peace, we're not exaggerating. It was the city of the peace, was the city that have the three religion enjoy practicing their religion in harmony, and no one stopped the others from doing that until the extremist right wing and Zionist came to the area and start to dig under the Al-Aqsa Mosque, because they say that we have our own temple there, buried over there and stuff like this, which is nobody knows the truth of it. So the tension there has all the dimension. It's not only one dimension tension, but the religion could be out of it if the extreme right wing Jewish are out of it.
Okay, drawing upon what the Jewish communities all over the world from different ethnicities, from different backgrounds, European Jews, there's Arab Jews, drawing upon what happened to them, as we said earlier, and about the unspeakable practices that happened in Germany. How easy or hard does this make reporting this story? So whenever the conflict is brought up and the story needs to be told and heard, wouldn't you think that using the word Zionist rather than Jewish could be a more accurate choice? Or what do you think? What's your take on this? Is this a Jewish issue, or is the Palestinian conflict mostly about Zionism?
It is for sure Zionism, because it's not Jewish, and I never consider it a Jewish, non-Jewish case. And we have to remember that the Zionism ideology, which is many Jewish against it, by the way, and we know Natri Karta, we know several Orthodox Jewish group who are opposing even the existence of Israel, more than what we spoke about. And they consider that Israel existence is a disaster for them. And I mentioned in the beginning when the Basel Switzerland conference took place, and we said that there is another conference take place in Montreal here by Jewish rabbis who rejected the idea.
They rejected this idea altogether, yeah.
And the Zionist ideology extended to some Christian as well. And there is belief that, and there is Zionist Christian movement, we know that. And they believe that the only way that the Messiah can come back to earth is after establishing the state of Israel. And so that's how they support it from a religion point of view. While on the other side is not a religion point of view. The other side is our land. We need to live in it in peace, and Jewish can live there in peace as well. So when you report this internationally, there is two lines there. The first line is, which is usually Zionists try to, and now there are several countries try to adapt this, and I don't care about this at all, that criticizing Zionism is anti-Semitic. This is ridiculous. Zionism is a political ideology that has nothing to do with anti-Semites. So why they try to do that? Because we are usually saying Zionism. That the cause of the problem is Zionism ideology. So they try to consider criticizing Zionism is anti-Semite. And even people went far to consider criticizing Israel is anti-Semite. So what about criticizing US, Al-Qaeda? Is anti-what? What about criticizing Britain, Egypt, Palestine? Anti-what? So how we can consider that we have no right to criticize ideology, have no right to criticize a state, because we will consider anti-Semites, and we're anti-Semites linked to Nazis act against Jewish people. That's ridiculous for sure, all over this. So it is Zionist ideology, and the core of the problem is the Zionist ideology, because if there is no Zionist ideology, and the Zionist ideology go away from it, Jews can live in peace and harmony on the Middle East. And they consider that because of what happened to Jews in Germany and in Europe, on the 30s, 1930s and before, and during the World War for sure in the 40s, they have the right to have their own state to live in peace. Believe me, Jews outside of Israel live in peace and enjoy peace far more than Jews in Israel. And that's not because of terrorism, because of all this stuff. No, that's because they never going to enjoy peace because they occupy the land. They will never have an interior peace in their own as a human, because they know that them or their parent or their grandparent evacuate people from their houses and they took it over from them. So peace could not be established like this. So I see that Zionism hurt Jews more than anything, than any other thing, because Jews in Canada, in the state, in Germany, they live in peace, in harmony. If there is anti-Semite, there is anti-Semite. For sure there is. There is Islamophobia. There is anti-Semite. There is everything. The hate is everywhere. But to try to fight against hate and to be live in peace, you shouldn't create another layer of hate. An apartheid regime by colonize a land of people and then evacuate them from their land and take over it, and even not deny them any rights. So I really call for the Jews all over the world to start to recognize, and to the Zionist Christian as well, to start to recognize that they do not serve peace. They serve violence, and they destroy the harmony and the peace of the people on earth, in the whole earth, not only in Palestine.
Now, let's move on to media coverage. How do you take the way this story, this crisis, is being covered across Canadian media platforms?
We have a problem for sure in our society with the mainstream media. And the problem, and I will use this term very clearly, is the bullying from the Zionist movement. Because they are, every time, as I mentioned a few seconds ago, you criticize the state of Israel, you consider you anti-Semite. So people cannot criticize the state of Israel. But this is, we'll criticize for sure when they do something wrong, which is they do something wrong almost every day. When you mention Zionism, they bully you. So that's why the media is afraid of going there. But let's see the way the media was acting 30 years ago, and the way the media is acting now, after all massacre happened in Lebanon, in Gaza, and in West Bank for sure, beside the apartheid regime. And when I mentioned that Jimmy Carter wrote a book considering what happened in Israel is apartheid, Jimmy Carter was the president of the United States, who is not a guy who doesn't know what he's saying when he put himself on this position. By saying that, because you know that all Jews attacked him and all Zionists attacked him, all Israeli attacked him. All this happened, there is a change on the way people seeing things. Because when the massacres happened in Lebanon, Cana massacre as an example, there was no social media as we have today. So the social media start to change the way people seeing things. They start to bring a real alternative to the media. So the mainstream media start to lose its credibility by just putting labeling and consider, because if we don't have a social media today, we will have on the media only a news is that terrorist group attack peaceful Israeli people and Israel government killing those terrorists and fighting against them. That would be the only thing we hear about, which is nothing real of this at all. But because of social media now, we hear every detailed, everything about that's going on in every second by this, the bombarding, the carpet bombarding of Gaza by the huge machine war that Israel has in hand, and the few rockets that are going on and I consider it is exactly as people throwing rockets on a person who has a firearm in hand and shooting them. So yes, they can maybe give a rocket in his hand or in his eye or something, but at the end they will kill them. So the media covering of this, the mainstream media covering it, is really controlled by the bully from the Israeli government and their supporter. And I just mentioned earlier that Joe Biden is one of the people who get finances his election by, I think, close to $2.5 million from the right-wing Zionist group. So it is known. It is known exactly why the media is taking the side and why the politician is taking the side. But I believe that people, when South Africa was under the apartheid regime, there was no social media. There were only mainstream media. Canada, US, and Great Britain was the biggest supporter of the apartheid regime in South Africa. But the civil movement and the human rights movement started within the civil society at that time, brought those governments to accept that the apartheid regime in South Africa has to go. And it left. So now with the tools we have in hand, I think the media start to listen and the media start to change. And from time to time, we listen to something really true and positive from the media, not just the false news coming from the Zionist propaganda machine.
So in other words, can we say that social media today is finally offering another version to the story we've been hearing all along?
It is alternative media, for sure. But we have to be careful that it has, for sure, carry sometime a lot of false news, you know? It's not 100% one stream that we say that social media have all the truth. Not all the truth, but it carries the truth. And for sure, with the truth, there's sometimes false information, false information. But we see how the correspondences of the mainstream media even use social media today. So Al Jazeera, France Press, the Canadian Press, the Associated Press, the BBC, all use social media now because they know that they lose their credibility if they didn't use and depend on the social media and the people bringing, because social media became as a freelance correspondences to the media who just volunteer to bring to the people whatever they see it. Sometimes they see it right, sometimes they see it wrong. But at least we have the whole information in front of us, not only one-sided information, and we have to be selective and to see what's the credible information, represent the reality, what's not.
Going now to Hamas, you being involved in politics for so many years, how would you analyze the political performance of Hamas and Fethullah?
I think that Hamas has tools and understanding of the international situation, understanding of how they can administrate this strip of Gaza, 2 million people under a very severe condition. And I think time has come that all those countries, even those who call them terrorist group, I think all those countries has to start to open dialogue with them and to get the truth of what they need and what they can do. And at that time, I think that we can start to see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Mr. Hamad Kamel, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Sarah, for you.
We've come to the end of our show today. Thank you for listening.
For CKUT, I'm Sarah Hassanin. See you next week.
Taking this side, but I believe that people, when South Africa was under the apartheid regime, there was no social media. There were only mainstream media. Canada, US, and Great Britain were the biggest support.
Le Festival international Nuit d'Afrique, présenté par la TD, vous invite cet été à sa 35e édition anniversaire. Soyez au rendez-vous du 6 au 18 juillet pour célébrer pendant 13 jours l'événement des musiques du monde. Cette édition innovante en salle, en plein air et en webdiffusion vous propose une fusion entre passé et présent, riche en histoire et découvertes musicales. Découvrez toutes les surprises, infos et billetteries sur festivalnuitdafrique.com.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Pardonne-toi, crée belle petite mère, à soir on fait la tournée. Dans les rues de nos grands-pères et de la plage à Cartier, l'amour fera partie de la fête. Un petit deck sur chaque fanal, il paraît que c'est bien correct. Le village du vieux Montréal. La la la. Laissons là l'automobile, prenons plutôt un taxi. Comme ça, on se fera pas de bulle si on vient un petit peu whisky. Tu sais comment on aime la vie, il se fait rallye canadien. Allons-y!